Oh, we're rolling. Go ahead, Mr. LaVorte.
Okay, ready. Well done.
I'm sure that helped with the microphone in his face, don't you think? Yes.
So my turn. Well, obviously we're going to speak about domain-specific language. It's a pretty hot topic today. Just a few words about me. Well, I'm leading the Groovy project, and you can read the details on the slide. Nothing critical. And if you buy my book, I will earn 50 cents or something like that. So don't hesitate. It's going to make me rich at some point. After a certain number of... Sorry?
After French taxes.
Yeah, after French taxes. No, I just wrote like a couple of chapters. That's why I just get 50 cents. Well, if you've got any question, I always have an answer. It's a different kind of accent. It's a French accent because I'm French, and if I don't understand your question, I will probably answer 42. But I'll be pleased to answer any question if I don't understand, just repeat it. So a few words about Groovy. Well, Groovy is a dynamic language for the JVM, which was created in 2003. And the little known secret is that back in 2004, the original founder of the project was contacted by Microsoft to have a version of Groovy running on .NET. It never happened, but we could have had Groovy on .NET. And it's dynamic language because it's got a meta object protocol, so you are able to intercept method calls, properties, and such. It's a language which compiles down to bytecode, so there's a seamless Java interoperability. Can mix and match Groovy and Java together. It's an open source project hosted at Codehouse, like Boo, the language which was mentioned in the previous presentation. The grammar of Groovy is deriving right from the Java 5 grammar, so it's very easy to pick up the language when you're a Java developer or even a C-sharp developer. It's a pretty close syntactic wise language, and we borrowed quite a few ideas from other languages like Ruby, Python, Smalltalk. It's pretty fast for a dynamic language on the JVM, so it could be faster, but the JVM is going to improve to also help us on that aspect. And there are many features that I could speak for hours and hours speaking on the various features, but that's not necessarily the topic of the day. So the context, usually, you've got two kind of populations. You've got the subject matter experts, your business analysts, and on the other side of the fence, you've got the developers who are producing some code. And each type of population speaks a different language, and usually not everybody understands each other, or there may be one word, an English word, can be very ambiguous, and someone may understand something, and someone else with a different background may understand something else. And I guess you've all seen this nice diagram where how the customer explained something, how the project lead understood it, etc. So really different understanding of the same problem. And I think that DSLs are a potential solution to this very old problem that we face. And the goal of a DSL is to let you use, first of all, a more expressive language because you want it to be, more readable, because usually you spend way more time reading code than writing code. And you want to share a common metaphor between those two populations, the experts and the developers, so that there's no ambiguity on a given word, a given token that you are using in this language. Also, although it's not necessarily domain experts who are going to write those business rules with those DSLs, but at least if domain experts can help with the design of those business rules, simply having a developer and a business expert sitting at the same table, and the business experts looks at the screen and says, okay, oh no, this rule should be written a bit differently because, just so that at least it's readable by the business expert. That would be a great achievement already. And also some characteristics that I like about DSLs in general. So I'm not giving a definition of DSL, nor will I explain differences between internal, external, etc. I don't really care about those definitions, and some persons have defined that quite well. Some of the characteristics that I quite like is the fact that you can really remove some boilerplate technical code. For instance, if you speak with a business expert and you show a rule written in your DSL and you have to tell him, okay, well, what do you see here, public, static, void, main, string, args? Well, it's just technical stuff. Don't worry, don't bother. I don't want you to have to do that. So DSLs are also a way of increasing the density of business concepts in a language and completely, or at least as much as possible, remove those technical aspects. I'll come back to that later on. And also, even with embedded DSLs, you are able to extract and even kind of put them external. So you can have embedded DSLs external. You can put those DSLs in an XML file, a database, or wherever you want, to cleanly separate business logic from application code. That's something which is quite interesting to do. And the consequence of that is that your business rules, your DSL can have its own life cycle and evolve independently of the technical code of the application you're building. So readability is really an important factor, in my opinion, in DSLs in general. So I'm going to show you an example of a little introduction first on this DSL. So it's an example I made up myself. It's not the real DSL. I'm going to show you the real DSL on the next slide. There are some American researchers working on a system for studying the resistance to anti-malaria drugs. Okay, so they've got a platform for running simulations, and they define some compounds, chloroquine drugs, which is made of compounds. So there are different characteristics like the quantity of compounds in that drug. You define a regimen. You're going to take two pills of that stuff right away, another pill in 6 hours, etc. You can also define some effects like the concentration in the blood or something like that. So this is the Java example. For instance, something interesting. There's an error there. It's a made-up example that's not running, but just to get the idea. It should be big decimal right there, never mind. If you want to have exact arithmetic on the Java platform, you can use big decimal for avoiding having rounding errors and such. If you look at this code, I tried to highlight in green the things which are really making up for the business aspects of the language. And there's basically just perhaps 20% of the characters of this bit of code which is really which bears some business concept. And that's a problem, because you have to read way more to understand what the code is doing. And actually, those researchers wrote a different version, and they chose Groovy for that purpose. Because, well, first of all, you'll see that there are much less lines of code, and the business concepts are much more, concentrated. The density of business concept is way higher, and perhaps up to 80%. And you can have something which is usually pretty readable by using various aspects of the Groovy language that we are going to speak about in a few slides. Okay, so this was at least a first example of a DSL in Groovy. DSLs, we are surrounded already by many DSLs, like some technical dialects when you're querying a relational database, when you define regular expressions for matching email addresses, or you can use DSLs for expressing certain notations, for instance, expressing the moves when you're playing chess, or when I was younger, I used to solve the Rubik's Cube, so I quite like this one. It's a notation for defining a formula for moving this piece of the cube to that other place. This is a notation, and for me, this is also DSL. And there are also, well, there's a characteristic we don't always mention, but this is also DSL because it's very visual, and you see that the higher the sound is, the higher it is on the sheet of music. And obviously there are also real life business examples like the first one I mentioned. And these ones are real DSL that have been implemented in Groovy by various folks. Human resources, employee skills, representation DSL, DSL for representing the rules of risk calculation engine for insurance policies. And even if sometimes, especially dynamic languages on the JVM are not as fast as Java itself, but people are also using Groovy for pretty intensive math-heavy applications. And there's a nuclear safety organization in France who's used Groovy as a thin DSL layer on top of some very efficient mathematic libraries for doing some simulations when there's a nuclear plant which explodes and such. They can just use a math-like syntax for expressing those simulations. And many more. So now let's see what Groovy gives you. The tools, the techniques that Groovy offers to let you write domain-specific languages. So first of all, it's got a pretty flexible and malleable syntax, and these are the various points I'm going to illustrate in the following slides. For instance, scripts versus classes. So you don't have to always write all those boilerplate technical aspects like public class, public static, void main, etc. If you just want to print hello, just say println hello. That's all you've got to do. So Groovy supports both full-blown classes as well as just plain single-line statements in the form of scripts. There's also optional typing. So Groovy is either typed or not. Actually, it's your choice. So in the cases where especially you don't want to see types, like in this example, you want to retrieve some lookup table for the rates for granting loans, etc. So let's say you've got that in your API somewhere, and in your DSL you want to retrieve that lookup table, just do def table equals something. You don't have to repeat all those boring generics information. So that can be pretty handy for making things more readable. What else? We've got native syntax constructs for expressing, for representing lists, maps, key values, and also ranges. You can also implement your own ranges of objects. So, for instance, Monday, Friday, maybe some kind of day type that you've defined in your API. And also Groovy, so although move left with the parentheses, the semicolons, it's also a valid Groovy statement because Groovy derives from the Java 5 grammar. But actually you can also omit both the parentheses and the semicolon. And in the end it reads pretty much like a normal English sentence, actually. So this is, again, towards the goal of improving and increasing the readability of a DSL. And something that we've seen in the example from the American researchers studying malaria, you can also use named arguments. So basically, you know, in Java or C#, I believe, arguments are always in the same order, and if you don't remember the API, you're kind of screwed, because you have to put the quantity first, then the drug, then the duration, and so on. But with Groovy, you can use named parameters. By the way, it's 2 a.m. for me, because I arrived from Paris yesterday, so I'm a bit tired, excuse me. If I fall asleep in the middle of the presentation, you know, just wake me up, and I'll be right in shape. So actually, in Groovy, how named arguments, named parameters are working, basically is just a map that you are passing to the real method. So as long as you've got a map with that kind of signature, you take a map and then some quantity. This would be the quantity. And so these parameters would be off and after would be keys, and chloroquinine in 6 hours would be values for the map, and 1.pill would be some quantity. And we are also going to see that you can, since Groovy is really fully object-oriented, and because it's got a meta object protocol, you can also add properties to things like numbers. So you are able to say 1.bill, 20.milliseconds, etc. So named arguments are quite neat. I mentioned Big Decimal already, but there's a US insurance company called Mutual of Omaha who used Groovy for expressing all their business rules for their risk calculation engine. And the biggest, really the key feature of Groovy, which made them choose Groovy instead of any other language, was the fact that Groovy, by default, used Big Decimal for arithmetic, for, you know, floating point arithmetic. Because if you have to write some interpolation formula in Java, well, you've got to say, well, there are some temporary variables, but you say e dot multiply, add, multiply, divide, blah, 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 and you have to specify the rounding and so on. And in the end, what you just wanted to write is this simple math formula. And in Groovy, just because we are supporting Big Decimal by default, and also thanks to operator overloading, we are able to use this neat syntax, which really looks like the normal math expression that you really want to write. So really, Big Decimal for, and that's also why many financial institutions, banks, insurance companies, and such chose Groovy, because it supported Big Decimal by default for exact arithmetic calculation. These days, with the economic crisis, it's not really important anymore if you've got a rounding error, which leads to you've lost, you know, $1 million. If you've lost $1 billion just a week before, it doesn't really matter anymore. But still, still, if you want exact arithmetic, it's nice to have that feature in the language. So what else? Thanks to closures, you are also able to write your own control structures. A closure is really just a block of code separated by curly braces, surrounded by curly braces. And if you create an unless method, which takes a boolean, comma, you pass an inline closure there, there's a shortcut notation where actually the last parameter being the closure, you can put it outside of those parentheses there and without any comma. And it just, well, basically it looks like an if statement, right? So instead of if, it's unless, but. That's the kind of things you can do to create your own control structures to manipulate your language. Okay, that's it for control structures. And also, I mentioned the fact that Groovy supports operator overloading. Well, there are, I'm not sure I've got the full list there, but there are quite a lot of operators which you can overload. How did you do that? Actually, you just have to have a power method on your class, a negative method on your class, and that's all you have to do for operator overloading in Groovy. And if you've got a currency amount class, you can say well, let's say that 15 euros returns some kind of currency amount instance. And then if on this currency amount class, you've got a dot plus PLUS method, you are able to use this shortcut notation with the plus sign. So you can imagine, well, many different kind of examples, the kind of things you can represent, workflow, distance handling, and so on. And something I wanted to, a point I wanted to stress, with language such as Groovy or any other languages which support embedded DSLs, there's a choice to be made at some point about the exact notation you want to have. And for crediting an account, after all, perhaps you want to use this left shift operator because it looks like you're injecting $10 into the account. But perhaps if the background of your end users are more into programming languages, perhaps you'll want to use plus equals because it means something for them. Or, you know, perhaps you want to be more explicit and write a real sentence, account credit $10. So there's an important work to do back and forth with the end users of this DSL to have the feeling of what reads better for them. And these were mainly the syntax aspects, but there's also the meta object protocol of Groovy, which is basically in Java you've got the class concept, which represents the behavior of your instances, but really at compile time. Whereas the meta object protocol, through what we call a meta class, represents the runtime behavior of your objects. And this is where you can intercept method calls, property access, and so on, and even add new operators which didn't exist on third-party types that you may use. I won't necessarily go into details in those different aspects, those different objects and classes that you can use, but basically all Groovy classes implement a certain interface, which is Groovy Object, which lets you intercept properties, method calls, and such, or change the meta class, the runtime behavior of your type or of your instance. And that's also how you are able to add new properties and new methods. So even if you do foo.bar, if there's no real bar method in your class, you can, it's going to be routed anyway through invoke method, and you can hook up and do something with that method. You can also define meta classes. There are more methods that you can override to add new constructors to existing types and such. And there are also some handy methods for checking whether this class responds to a certain message. And there's also this nice notion of exponent meta class for defining, for adding or decorating existing types, for instance. When I did 15.dollars, you just retrieve the meta class of the number type and add a getDollars getter, and thanks to the shortcut notation, getDollars become .dollars, and you can very easily add some type, some properties, sorry, to an existing type. Yeah, that's it. And there's also something I quite like, the builder pattern. So again, like the control structure you saw earlier, the use of closures can also be used for implementing the builder pattern, but at the syntax level in Groovy. So for instance, a DSL I worked on a while ago, so the labels were in French originally, but I tried to translate that. A company for which I worked for a while ago wanted to represent the skills of their employees, and they had a certain vision of how certain skills are a subset of some other skills. So they had a kind of tree structure of skills. And so this is basically how they represented that. And what you see here, soft skills, is a method which takes a closure. So you see this block is a closure. And inside that closure, there's another method call which takes another closure and some other method calls. So you see nested method calls taking closures. And really at the syntax level, you see the nesting of the various blocks. And this is something which is used in Groovy for writing builders for creating swing user interfaces, for creating XML documents and such. It's pretty handy. And in the end, what we did, people were putting that kind of DSL stuff in wiki pages, and I implemented a special macro in the on the wiki we were using for representing that visually, and you had those blocks and those rectangles inside those all the blocks showing the nesting of those scales. So the visual representation is also an artifact of the DSL. The DSL in the end generated this visual representation. Yeah, so that's basically what I said about builders. And again, it's really the trick is that you can instead of calling a method with some attributes which are just named parameters and then passing a closure, there's this shortcut notation that you can, if the closure is the last parameter, you put it outside of the parenthesis, and then you can make the calls nested and so on. And you see the example earlier represents just that, thanks to the fact that we can also remove those parentheses. And so I mentioned that we can add properties to numbers. There are different mechanisms for doing that. There's the category concept. You can write custom meta classes, or you can also use the expander meta class. And I'm going to illustrate that with two examples. A category. So it's a bit like extension methods in C#. I'm not very much into C#, so I hope you'll correct me if I say some stupid things. but basically, it looks a bit like what C# does with extension methods. What I find ugly, but that's just my taste, you have to use a category, and the category is applied to a scope. So I don't like seeing use distance category and surround my code with that, but there's an interesting, the scope is interesting because it's thread bound, so the properties, it's really just going to be, it's not changing, I mean, all the numbers in your virtual machine or anything like that. No, it's really a reduced scope. It's just also lexical in the sense that it's just what's within the closure where this property is going to be added. But the one downside is that it doesn't work across the hierarchy of classes. So if you made the distance property apply on number instead, which is the base class for integer, it wouldn't have worked. So you would have to create several getMeters methods for all the types, which is kind of not very neat, in my opinion. Expander meta class, on the other hand, can work on the hierarchy, but the thing I quite don't like about it that it's really global to the whole virtual machine. So you can imagine that, well, in practice, it doesn't really happen very often, but it may happen that someday someone steps on your toes because he wanted to add a getMeters property and you also added it. So what's going to happen? So beware of potential collisions there. And in Groovy 1.6, which was released a couple of months ago, 2 months ago. So basically, we've spoken a bit about quasi-quotation, meta methods, and so on. It's a bit similar to those concepts. So at some point, a compiler creates an in-memory representation of your source code. So this is the abstract syntax tree. But with Groovy, you've got a chance to hook up into the compilation process at different phases. And you can, with a visitor pattern, there's a method which takes an AST and returns an AST. So you can really transform the representation of your AST. So with that feature, we've added several new concepts, I would say, in the Groovy language. Like we've got a we've got an at. We used well, first, before saying what we've added, there are two kind of transformations: global transformations, which apply to everything that is being compiled, or local transformations, which are applied only to elements of your programs which are marked with a special annotation, an annotation that you would define. So we've added many such transformations in Groovy for implementing things like the singleton onty pattern, or the delegate pattern, lazy pattern, immutable pattern, and such. We've added that thanks to AST transformations without having to create new keywords into the language. So it's a way of extending the language, but with the help of annotation. And I think, well, and how to do that? Well, you've got you define a transformation, and you've got this visit method, which takes the AST representation of your code, and then you can do many transformations there, modify the AST the way you want. And for discovery, you have to put that information in some special file.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm sure it's just me. I've lost complete track of what I write.
Yeah.
What good things it does.
Yeah, so actually, let me just show you the example directly, because it's what I should have shown before. There's a framework called the Spock framework, which is a kind of testing behavior-driven development framework, where AST transformations are used quite heavily. So basically, there's an annotation which tells the Groovy compiler that it's going to transform the AST of this class, okay? First of all, you can define methods with quite some fancy names, but these methods' names are not allowed by the virtual machine. But by thanks to the AST transformation, you can make this method, you know, encrypted somehow, etc. So you can change the label of the method in the AST at some point. And also, if you were executing that code without any transformation going on, well, you'd get some compiler or some runtime errors, name missing property because I don't know what name is, again there and again there with size. And actually, what the creator of this framework did was that he reused labels to explain that, okay, you're going to expect this to be true. So you're not using any fancy assert, equals, blah, 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 no. You're just using plain old Boolean expressions. And you're going to also explain the context or the data that you want to pass through this expression. And in turn, since you're passing a list into that mysterious variable, you're going to execute three times this check with Kirk, with Spock, with Scotty, and you're going to check again those values for this variable. So executing this code would give you many runtime errors, but actually the framework is able to transform the AST of this code to do, you know, a loop for looping over all those variables and to make to check the values of these expressions, etc. So this code is really transformed into something completely different, but it's still pretty readable, meaning you're expecting things and with these given variables and such. So you are able to completely change the semantics of your program thanks to transformation. Yes?
So this is for programmers to write?
This is for programmers what?
This is for programmers to write.
Yeah, this is for programmers to, you know, to write something which wouldn't be a valid program. It would be valid Groovy syntax, but not a valid program in terms of semantics. But you are really perverting the language so that you reuse syntax elements to mean something completely different.
And that's good.
And that's indeed good, because you are able to write some pretty fancy stuff, like, for instance, when you annotate a class with @singleton, it's going to add a getInstance method and do all the right checks and so on. So it's pretty powerful, in my opinion. Then there are various ways of integrating Groovy DSLs in an application. In Java 6, there are some scripting API for doing this. There's a special Spring integration, and Groovy also provides its own mechanisms. What I like about, even if it's an embedded DSL, it's the ability to externalize those embedded DSLs so that your programs can have their own life cycle, so that you can store those programs written with those DSLs into, you know, an XML file, a database, or wherever you want. And with this different life cycle, you can just deploy once in a while your rules and not have to redeploy your full application. And also, the nice aspect is still about readability, but business people won't see those public static void main string blah 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 stuff. No, they will just see the code right away because you just focus on the business concept in that DSL externalized from the code surrounding it, technical code. It's not very interesting. I'm just showing the various APIs, the script engine manager, blah blah blah, and how you evaluate some simple expressions. In Spring, you can inject some beans and scripts pretty easily with a special lang namespace. Groovy provides its own mechanisms, like a simple evaluation eval class to eval some simple expressions. Groovy Shell is a bit more interesting because you can pass some context to the evaluation of your rules. The Groovy class loader is the one providing many hooks, and you've got a chance to do some AST visitation and such if you're not using AST transformations. What else? I think I've already mentioned that, how you can externalize your business rules, store them elsewhere to avoid mixing technical code and business code. And some considerations I wanted to, so that everybody should keep in mind when designing a DSL. First of all, you should always try to start small with really just the key concept, the most important concept. Yes?
Quick question before you get into this.
Yeah.
Just kind of glossed over the other kinds of visitation at the end, like through the class code visitor and such.
Yeah.
What kind of things have you seen done with that, and what do you envision kind of being done with that?
So with code visitation versus AST transformations, you mean?
Yeah. Right.
Well, actually, I think it's more a historical thing that in Groovy, even before AST transformations, which is a kind of framework for doing fancy stuff with AASTs. But initially, you had the chance of hooking into the compiler through Groovy Code. I never remember the class, the Groovy Code Visitor support, something like that. We've got some fancy names sometimes. So it was historically the way you would have done that. An AST transformation is actually probably a bit easier for people for writing their own AST transformations or simple visits. So I'd recommend people probably more to use AST transformations now, even if it's not about transformation, but just visit the AST. So usually try to start small with key concepts, because sometimes you know how powerful a language like Groovy can be, and you think that, okay, I can do all this fancy stuff with that Groovy language, it's going to be cool, and the users are going to love that, but actually stay simple, don't try to over-engineering things, because in the end it may be more of a hassle in the end, and not necessarily what users really want, end users really want or need. They don't necessarily know what they want, but it's your role to help them know what they want and need. And also grow your language. If you start small, then you start adding new structure, elements, new constructs, and so on. So start with a small seed and grow, especially since we are speaking about abstract syntax trees. I wanted to continue the metaphor there. Get your hands dirty by really playing with the end users in terms of syntax and so on, to really involve them in the process. It's also related to over-engineering or not, but really your DSL must fly, and it's not yours, it's theirs. The end users will have to make the DSL theirs and adopt it. So it's really your role to guide them when you are writing the DSL, but it's their role to help evolve the language for their needs. And especially try to have an agile process to this, with a tight feedback loop for progressively implementing, changing, improving the language to support more business concepts. So iterations are really important. Try to stay humble, because usually you can't get it right on the first time. It's going to evolve. So don't stay, you know, alone at your desk designing it, but really involve the end users and listen to them really in an agile fashion. It's really important. And also another aspect which is important with embedded DSLs, the fact that it's built on a general purpose language means that you have access to various things like system exit 0 in Java, which quits the virtual machine. So you can use normal security managers in Groovy, but you can also use some metaprogramming tricks to intercept method calls to say, no, you don't have the right to call that method. And you can even go further and reduce the AST that is allowed to be used. For instance, we've got an arithmetic shell which only allows arithmetic constructs, so A plus B, etc., but it's not going to allow you to call methods and such. So it can really reduce the scope of the AST which is allowed. Then, obviously, the real code that is being written. And obviously, test, and especially test for error cases, because end users are going to make errors, so you want to have meaningful error messages and so on. So that's really a very important aspect. And I'm pretty much on time, right? And sure. We started late, so...
That's true, you started late.
Okay, thank you. So really, Groovy is a great fit for domain-specific languages because of its malleable and flexible syntax, and also the fact that it's really fully object-oriented, which means you can add properties to numbers and things like that. And the metaprogramming capabilities are pretty interesting because, well, there's all those runtime hooks, but also those compile time, which are pretty efficient compile time meta programming tricks. And Groovy is already used for quite some fancy DSLs in real world applications. And that's it. So I'm the developer, and if you have any questions.
Yeah. Do you mind if I ask a question? If you go back?
Yeah.
So examples of this one?
Yeah, so for instance, the Mutual of Omaha company that I mentioned earlier, so they've got like 50,000 lines of business rules written in Groovy, explaining all the risk calculation stuff that they're doing for their, it's really their main application for their insurance policies. I mentioned the... a couple of weeks ago, I worked for a German company who is a European company, which provides a platform which is used by 10% of all the European banks for the platform for granting loans. And they use some simple DSLs like, when this customer has this blah, 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 then you can grant the loan, etc. A kind of DSL, a bit like the behavioral driven development frameworks. This kind of DSLs. And it's treating like 1 billion euros per month.
Wow. And so what did they use before Groovy?
So actually, they are currently switching their system to use Groovy, but not there yet.
Now?
But before, now actually, they had some horrible PL SQL backend for doing that stuff, and progressively they are migrating to a Java backend plus Groovy at certain key points for handling XML stuff and such, and also for expressing the rules for granting loans.
And they've liked that in general? That's better for them? That's more productive?
Yeah, and indeed it's more readable. That was an important point. Even if it's developers who write those business rules, the end users, the actuaries, the guys like that are able to read the rules themselves and help fixing stuff pretty easily. So that's
great. Well, thank you very much, Guillaume.
Thank you.
Thank you.